Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. This week we'll be talking about the midterm elections, CNN and Jim Acosta, and gay penguins in Australia. Thanks so much for listening.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us this afternoon. Once again, to remind you that this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule, since he is some 5 hours ahead of us there in London, England, where we find Tom this evening. And Tom, good evening to you. And how are things in London? Particularly, how's the weather?
The weather's lovely at the moment, Lockwood. It's absolutely beautiful. I would say the sun is shining, except the moon's about to come out, because it gets a lot darker here sooner than it does in the States.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're on the same latitude as Calgary or Irkutsk in Siberia.
Oh.
So, you know, it's now just after 4 o'clock, 4:30 in the afternoon, because we're taping this early, 4:30 here, and it's getting dark.
Now, by the way, I just want to make mention of this. You also experience daylight savings and standard time there in the UK. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, what about the rest of Europe? Does Europe also celebrate that?
Yes, they do.
Really?
Yes.
One wonders why. I mean, it's historically...
For the same reason you do. The farmers.
Okay, it's a U.S. Well, it's ostensibly a U.S. creation, at least as I understand it.
I don't know who created it, but whoever did set the precedent, and everyone follows it.
It goes back to Benjamin Franklin, of all places. But all right, we'll continue on.
He blamed for lightning as well.
Yes, he did. He found it. He discovered lightning, I guess. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, where every now and then we try to have a little lightning in our activities. Tom, the first question, of course, goes to the events here in the States. We'll talk about that for a few minutes. Then we're going to get into details there in the European community. And, of course, this is really related to the European community. The recent visit by President Trump to Paris, and, of course, now the tete-a-tete, shall we call it, between President of France, Mr. Macron, and President Trump. How is that being recorded and reported there in the European press, and particularly the London press?
The end of the bromance.
The end of
between,
the bromance, okay.
Macron and Trump, I think, it is one way to sum it up. There's lots of strands to it. When it comes to the European army, a lot of people are saying, well, you know, if Trump wants us to spend more money on defense, it makes sense that we would spend it on a European army.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to spend the money. We want to have some control over it. A lot of people are saying, no, Trump doesn't want that. He doesn't want to spend money on creating a European army. He wants it to be spent through NATO, because that way you have to buy more American weaponry, which helps the American economy. Basically, Trump's not coming out of it very well. The issue of nationalism versus patriotism. They think Trump is using alternative definitions here, that everyone here knows the difference between patriotism and nationalism. They can't understand why he thinks it's so different. And then, of course, they're all calling him a coward, a rather wet or not wet, dry coward for not going out in the rain.
Part of this, I would argue, probably had to do with security issues, and at the same time, the whole issue of his travels are so complex. But so there, the criticism continues related to his failure to attend the ceremonies.
Yep.
at the back.
The comments by Obama's security officer saying that there's always an alternative, a rain alternative,
mm-hmm.
got a great deal of space over here.
So let's stick with the issue of the European army and the role of NATO. Is there serious interest in creating a European army? And, of course, it was noted to defend Europe from China, Russia, and the United States, I saw in one story. So is there a sense that the U.S. is potentially a threat to the European community?
they sense that Trump is a threat to the European community.
Okay, they're conflating those two issues. Here's the other question.
Well, he is the president.
Oh, he is the president. Let's talk about this in relationship to the bromance, Emmanuel Macron, who is the president of France. But also let's bring in the role of Germany in this and Chancellor Angela Merkel, who, of course, has announced her plans to retire here near term. Has Macron taken over, if you will, as the leader of the European community from Chancellor Merkel?
Not quite yet, because France is still weak economically compared to Germany.
Mm-hmm.
But France has always had a strong military. The two European military powers are Britain and France. Germany is a military midget compared to France. So on defense matters, Macron has a louder voice than Germany. One of the reasons why they wanted to keep Britain in the EU was because it was a military balance against France. Now that balance is disappearing.
Okay, we're going to talk about the role of the British government and European Union and, of course, Brexit. But let's stick with other issues here. I want to get to some, well, shall we say, local issues, U.S. issues. Other news of interest, the California fires there, and we've been watching with interest that experience. And I'm wondering any relationship to that and the experience in Greece just 9 months ago.
I haven't seen anyone draw any parallels.
Wow.
There might have been a passing reference to climate change, and we're all part of the same planet, and that one of the problems is the forest drying up. But I haven't seen any real reference or connection being drawn between the two. The main focus in the reporting here has been one on the loss of life and right. How terrible it is. And of course, there's a few celebrities. The celebrities always get prominence. But also Trump's reaction to it, that somehow or another the fires are the fault of the state of California because California is Democratic.
No. Wait. It's not because it's Democratic. There are issues associated with what California has established in policies, both in the allowance of business or residences to move more into the treed areas, the forested areas, but also the restrictions on clearing those forested areas, cutting the forestry or the timber industry. So, I mean, has there been any discussion about that? The similar situation, quite frankly.
There has been mention of it, but basically it's very much against Trump.
Okay.
That the idea is that Trump is saying these things because he's opposed to environmental lobby.
Well, the other aspect of it is, and we won't belabor it, but there is a complex issue in California, and there have been some noted experiences here that some areas have been opened up to development that historically have not, and also the rapid growth of California. So I find it interesting that the European community is sort of associating this with politics, where arguably he's talking about policies. I don't want to belabor this, but, you know, it does.
I think it's the way he says it.
Oh,
I think it's the way he says it as much as anything.
That has merit. He can be rather blustery. This does, and we're going to move to a quick few other items here in just a moment with you, Tom. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us from London, England. And yes, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded because of the late hour of its broadcast here stateside. The other quick question for you, Tom, before we go to the break. Obviously, President Trump's his PR, his public relations in the European community, and I guess even in there in England, the United Kingdom, is not doing all that well, I gather.
You're right.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. I find that not surprising. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We're chatting with him, and again, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded. We've got a lot to go over today, and I just want to stick with events here in the United States for a few more minutes with you, Tom, especially how they're being reported worldwide. Of course, recent stories, let's stick with the issue of Donald Trump here, President Trump, and the story in Washington, D.C., Jim Acosta of CNN having a dispute with the president and a press conference, which has resulted in his being his credentials being removed. And of course, now it's turning into a lawsuit. I smile when I say this. I find it interesting. What is the coverage there in the United Kingdom and in Europe?
Well, you know, I heard someone say the other day on the radio, we've had post-truth, we've had alternative facts, and now we have doctored videos, which Kellyanne Conway says is not doctored, only speeded up, which is another way of saying doctored in my book and in the books of the people who are watching it over here.
Okay, so we're talking about the fact that Mr. Acosta did, in fact, push the lady's hand away from the microphone.
Yes, but okay. Did he inappropriately touch the lady, as the White House said, or did their hand just sort of basically come into contact? Did his hand come into contact? I mean, you know, it's what the White House put out as a video, and
it looks
a lot worse than what I saw on the BBC.
Well, here's the question, really unrelated.
And we're talking about the First Amendment. I mean, really,
it's been
done because he doesn't like CNN. Doesn't like Jim Acosta. Because Jim Acosta inappropriately touched anyone. Not that the president would ever inappropriately touch any woman at any time at any point in history.
Okay, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Tom, your love and appreciation for the president is just so apparent. In light of the fact that we have an individual who initiated a debate with the president in the press conference, by the way, was that portion of the press conference aired there in the UK?
Right. Fully. I've been in his position at press conferences.
Okay, but that's
where I've gone on a bit too much.
Well, that's fine.
I actually had a reporter throw his notebook at me once because I was asking too many questions.
Well, that's fine.
Press conferences are a scrum.
Well,
you try and get in as many questions as you can before being told that's enough.
And he was told that's enough not once but several times. Is this the same attitude that the British press have when they're talking to, for example, the prime minister?
Yes.
Same activities. All right. I find it interesting. So this is getting coverage.
As I said, I've had it. Okay. I had what happened to Jim Acosta happen to me.
Okay. Well, let's continue on. Less concerned about you. I want to continue the conversation here for a few more moments about what's happening here in the States. Another quick question on this, and this is related to the leadership role in the U.S. Congress. Great deal of concern and discussion about the future of Nancy Pelosi, former Speaker of the House, and potentially the new Speaker of the House. Is that getting much coverage there? Is there the intrigues in Washington?
It's being mentioned in passing.
Okay.
But people are not that interested in the nitty-gritty details of internal debates within the House of Representatives. And so it's only being mentioned in passing.
Okay. And what about the experiences then with the elections, and particularly the issues there in Georgia, Florida, Mississippi, the fact that there's still ongoing disputes related to those ballots? Is that being covered then?
Oh, absolutely. And again, Trump, I'm afraid, is coming out of it, you know, not so well. He's claiming that the Republicans are victims of fraud. And as the press keeps reporting here, the sentence always follows: President Trump is claiming that there is fraud, is followed with the words, without any evidence.
Okay. Well, and of course, there is evidence in Florida, particularly in light of the fact that some ballots have all of a sudden appeared. You know, the other aspect of this, Tom, and this goes to the issue of let's pick on the United Kingdom here for a moment. How are your ballots counted? Are they counted electronically, or what's the procedure?
By hand.
By hand. Okay, and how long does it take for the tallies to be concluded?
Usually at the outside, about 18 hours.
Okay, and here we have in Broward.
It's counted in each constituency. Each constituency, the local government is responsible for counting the ballots, and it's a race between the different constituencies to see who can count them the faster. I have attended many of these counts, and they have hundreds of people, each have boxes of ballots being thrown on the tables in front of them, and they quickly go through them by hand, putting them in different piles, and behind them stands a representative of each political party, making certain that they're not cheating.
Okay, and of course, I find it interesting that the fact that Broward County in Florida still, some 5 days later, still hasn't concluded its tally. One would wonder if the president doesn't have some concerns there related to the validity of that count. The other item here, and this is one that I'm just curious about, this has to do with the events here in the U.S. and the fact that Amazon has now announced its new headquarters, well, Eastern headquarters, which has been bifurcated, split up, Queens, New York, and of course, Northern Virginia there in Washington, D.C., getting much coverage in the European community. And I'm wondering, what's the opinion of Amazon?
I haven't seen any coverage of the moving headquarters, but they don't like, well, and I say they don't like the people buying things from Amazon like Amazon because they get them cheaply and they're using it more and more. But the success of Amazon is resulting in a lot of traditional high street shops, retail shops, going out of business. Big names like Debenhams and House of Fraser are really either going out of business or closing or under threat. And as a result, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, who's like the Secretary of Treasury, has said recently that he will be introducing measures to tax Amazon and other social media sites in order to level the playing field, as they put it.
Now, we're talking about that here in the States as well, as a matter of fact, the introduction of internet taxes. So Amazon's having an influence and impact there in the European community as well. I mean, obviously in the UK because, we're cousins separated by a common language.
But across Europe, let me just add that the British government has tried to work out an international formula or international approach to this because you've got the problem that Amazon for Europe is based in Dublin, where they pay very low taxes. They pay no taxes here in the UK or very few taxes and so forth and so on. So they try to develop an international approach, but so far they have failed.
The fact that both Northern Virginia, of course, near the center of power for the universe, for all intents and purposes, being Washington, D.C., tongue firmly planted in cheek in that one, and of course, New York City, major financial district as well. In both instances, both those very suffering and poor economies, again, being sarcastic, are now giving money to the rather, you know, puny little company Amazon for them to locate those businesses there. That is, they're basically buying the business or the location of Amazon. That's the assumption here in the States on this announcement yesterday. I'm wondering.
Very common practice.
Is it common?
It's done here in Europe all the time.
Is it really?
Yes, they get tax breaks. You know, sometimes they get away with not having to pay taxes for 5-10 years.
How is that received? Is that accepted?
Yes, it is accepted. If the local government is prepared to do that because they think this business is going to be creating thousands and thousands of jobs and to be able to tax those individuals and those individuals will spend money in the local shops, then yeah, they say great.
Does this create some sort of, if you will, competition, not only between cities and communities there, for example, in the United Kingdom, but between countries? For example, a plant considering the option of moving to France or the Netherlands or to Spain?
Yes.
Or really?
Yes. Yes, it does.
Wow.
It does all the time.
I think this is worth further.
It's just accepted as part of the way of life here. What I would personally think that the federal government should be encouraging people like Amazon to set up headquarters in places like West Virginia.
Well, no question. But the
you know, give them tax breaks to do it.
That may be the future. It's something that I have a little.
They do it here.
Well,
in the depressed areas in Europe, the European Commission will give breaks of some sort or another to encourage people to set up in underdeveloped areas.
All right, we're going to talk about that in a moment, light of Brexit just around the corner here with Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Again, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from lookaheadnews.com. Britain is a united kingdom again. After more than 2 years of divisive vitriolic debate, it has emerged upon the sunny upland plain of total agreement. Soon the British public will be treated to the sight of former bitter enemies Boris Johnson, Vince Cable and Jacob Rees-Mogg joining hands to skip gaily into the Commons Division lobby. Nigel Farage and Bob Geldof may soon embrace on the banks of the Thames. Fathers and sons who've scowled at each other for 2 years will again smile across the breakfast table. Mothers and daughters will cheerfully gossip over a steaming cuppa, and the pubs will enjoy a booming trade as stalled friendships are renewed over a pint or two. Prime Minister Theresa May has succeeded in uniting the British people against the common enemy, herself. Brexiteers and Remainers, who only yesterday were at each other's throats, have turned as one to sink the political axe firmly into the back of their Prime Minister and her draft Brexit deal with the EU. It took less than 24 hours for Dominic Raab, the man Mrs. May placed in charge of Brexit negotiations, to resign. He refused to allow his name to be associated with the agreement. He was preceded by the junior minister for Northern Ireland, Shalashvara. At least 9 other cabinet ministers are known to oppose the deal, and it is quite possible that there could be more resignations before I finish this piece. Wait, here comes another one. The resignation of Work and Pension Secretary Esther McVeigh has just popped up on my screen. The Prime Minister will need a political miracle to win parliamentary approval for her deal. Voting against her will be the Labour Party, the Scottish National Party, the Liberal Democrats, the Green Party, her sometime allies in Northern Ireland's Democratic Unionist Party, a fistful of former cabinet ministers, and a large number of disgruntled backbench Tory MPs. Mrs. May is on record as saying leave means leave, and no deal is better than a bad deal. In the eyes of both Remainers and Brexiteers, a deal the Prime Minister has struck results in leave means remain without any say in the construction of Europe's rules and regulations. This is a worse deal rather than a mere bad deal, and the prospect of much vaunted global trade deals to replace commerce with Europe has just flown out the window. Here are the bones. Divorce bill of £39 billion. Transition period of 21 months to give businesses a steep downhill slope exit rather than a cliff edge. Transition may be extended if jointly agreed. A trade deal to be hammered out during the transition period. EU citizens currently in the UK can remain and work and bring their relatives. Brits in Europe can do the same, but uncertain about whether they can cross borders. The rulings of the European Court of Justice have the force of law during the transition period, including new judgments. The transition period can be extended indefinitely, but Britain would have to pay for the privilege, and fishing rights remain unresolved. Then there's the sticky problem of Ireland, which has bedeviled these negotiations as it has British history for centuries. Both sides were keen to avoid a north-south hard border, which could spark a return to the Troubles. The result is that during the transition period, or extended transition period, all of the UK will remain in the customs union. Northern Ireland will remain in it afterwards, with additional ties to Europe. Furthermore, an agreement on ending the customs union will be a joint decision between the EU and UK. Britain cannot unilaterally decide to leave the customs union. Its future will be decided by Brussels. This result was inevitable. The Brexiteers entered these negotiations without a clear goal, divided, and with an exaggerated sense of their importance.
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And again, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule, since he is some 5 hours ahead of us. Yet, as we heard earlier in the program, he is enjoying standard time, as we are here in the United States. They do also change their clocks. It's amazing how mankind can move time, Tom. I find it fascinating. We can save daylight. Let's talk here for a moment, since we touched on it just a few moments ago, on the topic of the economy and particularly Brexit. And this is going to be a fairly involved conversation. I know that Prime Minister Theresa May has made a presentation to Parliament and is meeting, caucusing, I guess would be the right term, with her party. Where is this? There's apparently a plan to have a decision by tomorrow, if I understand it correctly. And I say a plan. So share with us.
A plan, not a decision. What's happened is that officials, that is the diplomats, have reached an agreement. It hasn't been approved by the politicians, although Mrs. May's in favor of it. She is, as we speak, having to sell it to her members of the cabinet. The cabinet is, at very least, divided. Recently, you know, Boris Johnson resigned. Mm-hmm. Well, he had a brother who was in the cabinet called Joe Johnson. Boris was a Brexiteer. Joe Johnson was a Remainer. Both of them resigned, one because they don't like how it treats those who were in favor of Remain, and the other about resigned because he didn't like the way it treated the Brexit people. So neither side is happy. Once she sells it to the cabinet, which is debatable whether or not she can, she then has to sell it to Parliament. Now, the details have not come out yet, but what has leaked so far indicates that nobody will be happy with it. So it is highly unlikely to get through Parliament.
The argument would be then if no one's happy about it, it's probably the best deal. What impact is this having?
I've heard that argument, but I think they are so unhappy that both sides will vote against it. There'll be a small bit in the middle who say, yeah, let's, you know, it's the worst of all possible worlds, but it's the only world we've got.
What impact is this having, first, on her political cachet, her political capital, for want of a better description?
Well, a lot of people now just feel sorry for the woman. She's really been landed with a poison chalice.
As I recall, Ms. May was not in favor of the exit from the European Union, yet once the referendum was passed, she sort of embraced it and became the prime minister, and it became her responsibility to navigate the process. Am I correct on
that? That's absolutely right.
Okay.
Yes, she took the view that there was a democratic vote and that as the prime minister, it was her responsibility to carry out the wishes of the majority.
Well, that's to her credit. Is she facing a imminent vote of support?
She's facing an imminent vote of no confidence, I think, or imminent vote of no confidence.
Okay.
Now, what happens if she has a vote of no confidence? Well, one of two things could happen. She could call a general election.
Mm-hmm.
Or she could simply resign, and then the Conservative Party would then elect a new prime minister.
Would that possibly be Boris Johnson?
It could possibly be Boris Johnson.
And how well received would that be by the vast majority of the British public?
They would be split, just as they are split over the issue of Brexit.
The other aspect of this is, of course, selling this to the British public, to the Parliament, but also selling it to the European community. What's the status right now? Are they leaning towards the proposed changes, or is there a sense that it's dead on arrival?
It's difficult to say with any certainty, except for Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
Ireland is, I think, willing to accept it because it looks as if Northern Ireland will be effectively subsumed into Southern Ireland, which is, of course, exactly what Northern Ireland doesn't want.
Right.
And you could end up having literally a civil war over the issue.
Northern Ireland is part of the United Kingdom. Southern Ireland is its own, the Irish Republic is its own country. That's, you know, it's a real challenge recognizing that. And it's something that really doesn't resonate here in the States that well. The economic impact of this on the European economy, what is the status on that?
Well, it depends on what sort of deal we have. If mm-hmm. there's a, a no deal is if this is rejected by Parliament and Britain withdraws from the EU without a deal, it's going to have a much bigger impact than if there's a deal. The deal that's on the table now basically keeps Britain in the customs union.
Right.
And so there's going to be very little economic impact if that's the case. But from the point of view of the Brexiteers, being in the customs union will significantly hamstring their ability to negotiate foreign trade deals with other countries. In fact, make it virtually impossible. That's one of the reasons for leaving.
Of course, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us from London, England. We've been paying close attention to the oil, the decline in oil prices. Is that something of interest in the European community?
It's of interest. It's not being reported in great detail here. I don't know why. I mean, you mentioned this to me earlier today, so I did a bit of research, and basically they are saying, yeah, that's fine. Here in the UK and EU, it is being seen as helpful because it's holding down inflation.
Right.
Here in the UK, it's being held down to just over 2%. And if the prices went up, oil being a big part of the consumer package, then inflation might go up another 2 or 3%. Not 2 or 3%, but tenths of a percent.
All right.
From 2.3 to 2.7 or something like that.
Okay. Another item, since we're talking about oil, I'm curious about the situation in the Middle East. You've got a note here, Oman becoming important. How so?
Well, Oman has been always one of these sort of forgotten countries, you know, a backwater.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, they invited Benjamin Netanyahu for the very first time. An Israeli prime minister was invited to Oman. And Sultan Qaboos is expected to make a return visit to Israel. Now, the story is that everyone else is sort of not speaking to each other at the moment.
All right.
And Oman, having been out there on a limb, really just a trading nation dealing with everybody, is the only one left who can speak to everyone.
Hmm.
And so it is beginning to project itself as an honest broker. So you might be seeing a bit more of Sultan Qaboos, the 77-year-old Sultan of Oman.
Well, this is an important story, and since you bring up that topic of Netanyahu and Israel, we've been paying attention here recently in the States, as a matter of fact, the past 2 days, about missile attacks, and apparently a ceasefire has been negotiated right now. But I'm wondering, is there some concern that things are heating up, shall we say, in the Middle East, particularly related to Israel?
When things like this happen, they shrug their shoulders, but it's sort of, oh, here we go again sort of thing. It's very interesting. The defense minister, Israeli defense minister, has resigned
Over the ceasefire.
Netanyahu said that he wanted to have a restore of a ceasefire.
Right.
And the defense minister said that's giving in to terrorism. Jason Greenblatt issued a statement in which he said, we're going to back you to the hilt. Go for it, Israel. So he looks as if he was in favor of action against Gaza. And the Trump administration was in favor of it. It could be that I'm just reading between the lines here. We haven't had the much promised peace proposal from Kushner and Greenblatt.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you have problems now in Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia was going to be a key part of any peace process. Just reading between the lines, I would think Netanyahu's thinking, now's not the time. We need to buy time rather than get involved in any big fighting.
And, of course, as you mentioned a moment ago, and we won't belabor this, but the topic of Saudi Arabia and Yemen, things just, are you seeing a lot of news about Iraq, Syria?
Yes, we are seeing a lot of news. We're seeing a lot of news about Yemen. The UN is predicting a major famine.
Mm-hmm.
I think the words they were used were the worst in 100 years anywhere in the world, or major human catastrophe. Saudi Arabia says that they're close to ending the war, that they're going in for a final push. But they've been going in for a final push for some time now. So, you know, everyone is watching it and they're all criticizing Saudi Arabia.
Right.
And by association, the U.S. and Britain, because both countries are supplying weapons and intelligence backup.
Yes. And of course, there's talk about requesting the U.S. step out as well. European community, are they avoiding any participation in the Yemen-Saudi conflict?
The European community doesn't have any intelligence or military to send, so it can't participate in that way. It's only the nation states. So France is involved as well. Britain and the United States are the two biggest players. The United States obviously much bigger than Britain, but France is a very large third player.
Okay. I want to get back to this very quickly in just a moment as we wrap things up with our guest this afternoon, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And of course, you're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Joining us this evening from London, England, some 5 hours ahead of us in time frame. So as a result, we are pre-recording this portion of the program. Tom, I want to touch on, two items here. One having to do with Thanksgiving and then the topic of the successful NATO exercises. And then we got to talk about the penguins, gay penguins at that. Real quickly, successful NATO exercises, and we were chatting a few moments ago about the military events there in the Middle East. What's happening with NATO?
Well, I wanted to stick this in the context of the European army and Trump's visit. You know, the relations between Trump and European leaders are rather strained, and one of the reasons is because they're not giving enough money. Europe's not giving enough money to
NATO
defense.
Right.
But at official level, at military level, they are better than ever. We just had huge exercises, military exercises, in the Baltic area, the biggest since the end of the Cold War, and they were deemed a massive success. And one of the reasons I think they were a massive success is because the military people on both sides are keen to show the politicians that they can work together and they can achieve positive things.
There is still teamwork available in NATO. All right,
it's better than ever.
All right, that's interesting. In light of the fact that a recent survey, or actually study, about the U.S. military notes that the U.S. military is not prepared for some major military action, particularly against Russia and China and potential impact of a two-front war. So NATO, of course, is where that sort of exercise is important. So I find that interesting. I've got to ask a quick question. We'll talk about this later next week, but curious, Thanksgiving, is the European community gearing up for Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving is entirely
a U.S.
and American thing. They do have a Thanksgiving in Canada. Now, it's based on the Harvest Festival,
right,
which can be found in virtually every culture.
Right.
But the Americans have taken it to a new level. I celebrate Thanksgiving. Every year, my wife and I, we're both Americans, we invite about 20 of our friends for a big Thanksgiving feast, complete with turkey, and I stand up and give a speech. And like the Pilgrim Fathers, who gave a speech, thanking the Indians for welcoming them to their country, I stand up and thank the British for welcoming my family.
Look forward to hearing more about that a little later on. I want to wrap it up with this final note. Gay penguins become parents?
Yeah, I thought you might like that one. Sydney Zoo. They're two male penguins who, shall we say, bonded.
Okay.
And so the zoo authorities have taken an egg, which they have fertilized IVF style, and given it to the two male penguins who are sitting upon it and hatching it and raising a young penguin.
It's just one of those stories that, quite frankly, is outrageous. Maybe if someone might find it humorous, but I mean, it's just over the top. Why? I'm obviously this whole issue of the gay culture is now being foisted,
LGBT being foisted, comes to the penguin world,
being foisted upon animals in captivity. And this is getting, this is covered? I mean, this is actually is a news item.
It was on Reuters.
Really?
Yep.
We'll leave it at that, Tom. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this evening. We always finish it up with something that's unusual. This, well, comes in the category of weird. Tom, as always, thank you for your time. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.